This is Dan Jurgens. You're listening to the Green Lantern Corecast.
For our listeners, tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got into the business for starters.
Oh, geez, how did I get into business? When I was a kid, and I'm talking like 14 or 15, I had written, kind of a fan letter to Mike Grell, and several years later, and at that time, Mike was, I think drawing the Legion of Superheroes at DC, and he went on to create, and draw Warlord, and he was making a personal appearance one day. And I stopped after work, showed him my stuff, and it just so happened that at that time, they were looking for an artist on Warlord. They threw a few pages out there in terms of script pages and said, draw a few pages. They used those as samples when compared with a few other guys as well, and the next thing you know, I was on the book, and that started with Warlord 63, I think, and I've been, in the biz ever since.
Wow. Now, Warlord was a really popular book back then.
Yes,
he's still a very popular character even now, for those
right.
that remember.
No, but at that time, it was a very popular book, and certainly, especially for DC at that time, a fairly unique book as well.
Yeah, I mean, pilot trapped in the Middle Ages, or somewhat of, and having to survive on his keen insight.
Right.
Do you, did you keep up with Grell's return to the book recently?
Somewhat, yeah. I certainly know more or less what was happening in the book and the general scope of where he was going.
Right. Yeah.
Were you pleased by it?
Yeah,
I think my only comment, and this is no, insult to anyone who was drawing the book, is I wish Mike could have drawn the whole thing himself, each and every issue. He did a few, but it would have been nice to see him there every month.
Definitely. I enjoyed the last couple of issues. I hope he does another DC project soon.
Yeah, that'd be nice to see.
Yeah.
Aside from that, I know you had a long tenure with Superman. I know you were one of the creating influence in creating Doomsday as a character back when he was introduced during Death of Superman. And I know a lot of people know even understand the reasoning why Superman was killed. How did you come up with the Doomsday character to begin with?
Well, at that time, if you go back to where the Superman books were, and at that point, I'd been on the books for a couple of years. One of the problems I had in working on them is I always thought that it seemed to me as though Superman just didn't have enough physical villains. His primary villain was probably Lex Luthor. There was, like Parasite. There was Brainiac. There was Mr. Mikshaz Pitalik. But if you wanted to have Superman, kind of have a knockdown, drag-out, toe-to-toe, knuckle-to-knuckle kind of fight with, he just didn't have anybody like that, or certainly, no one who had withstood the test of time. So I know that as we talked about things, the one thing I wanted to do was give Superman a real physical enemy, so to speak, and along with that, make it very different than Luthor, because everybody else who Superman was fighting, they always had to kind of reason out their plot and their schemes and everything else. And Doomsday was meant to be a complete force of nature and the very, very physical kind of threat that Superman had not had.
Yeah, with me, I was always skeptical of Iron Man and Hulk stories because that's all they did was to fight mm-hmm. the giant robot and fight the giant monster that was Hulk-like. So it was quite refreshing to see a Superman villain get up there and go toe-to-toe, and seemingly what we saw in the last Superman movie was the lack of somebody for him to show off just how amazing and super he really is. So thank you for bringing Doomsday.
Well, you're welcome. I mean, in the last movie, I think the last movie was a clear indicator of it. When you get to the point where, like in the movie, you have a scene where you have to surround Superman with kryptonite and then essentially have Luthor kind of knock him down. I mean, that was the problem. You always had to build that. You had to weaken Superman before you could have the physical confrontation. And yeah. I wanted to do something very different than that.
All right. Mission accomplished.
Thank you.
Real quick, was it always your intention to have Booster get the first hit in?
For Booster to get the first what?
To get, you know, when Doomsday first showed up, to have Booster to get the first hit in.
Oh, absolutely. And not only that, it was, I thought it made a lot, you know, Booster, if you go back to the story, actually is the one who named Doomsday, which I thought, you know, was kind of great fun, that the guy who'd always try and be kind of in the press and everything else ended up giving Doomsday the name that the press would pick up on.
All right. Well, let me move on to Andrew. Andrew, you have some questions for Dan.
Well, hey there, Dan. A big welcome on behalf of the GreenLanternCorps.com, and it's just a real pleasure. As being largely a child of the 90s, I have to say, the death of Superman, reign of Superman, Hunter Prey, Doomsday Wars, death of Clark Kent, I was there for all of it, and I loved it, man.
Okay, thanks.
Moreover, you've always drawn, like, the definitive Superman for me in all forms. First question. How would you say, kind of in broad terms, how would you say that time travel in the DCU now is different than it was in, say, the 90s, like around Zero Hour?
Well, I think, you know, if you go back to what it was at that time, there was kind of an attempt to restrict it a little bit. And, you know, what they wanted to do was make time travel very, very difficult to achieve. And there were people at DC who wanted to put rules on it and say, well, like, you know, you can't travel through time more than once using the same technique. The problem is, as soon as you say that editorially, you've got, you know, 20 writers who are going to go out there and try and break the rule, in part because it made no sense. I mean, so you're telling me that Booster can travel through time once in the time sphere and then he has to go use, you know, Flash's treadmill or something like that. And to me, that never made sense. And what we have this time, and I think this is partially a function of 52, is things have loosened up a little bit more. You know, again, you go back to DC in the 80s, and you can only have essentially one universe. You can only have Earth 1, for example. And now we've got the 52 back again, and I think we've got things loosened up a little bit so we can do time travel stories and have some fun with them once more.
Cool. And speaking of Zero Hour, just what was it like writing Hal as Parallax in that? I just remember, I remember as a kid I was reading like the big reveal near the end of that, and it got me hook, line, and sinker. And it seems like you had a lot of fun with him there.
We did. I mean, I know a lot of people have their problem with what happened to Hal in terms of becoming. What's that?
I'm not among them. I think that it's actually one of the best things that's been done to his character in history, I think.
Well, and I think what ends up working out is not just doing that, but then the rehabilitation that came along later. Mm. It all became an important part of the character's history and tapestry. And so when we started to put the Zero Hour project together, you know, from a timing standpoint, you go back to that time, you had had the death of Superman, you had had Batman break his back and do everything they did with Azrael and everything else. And what we ended up with was, I think, DC trying to do that same sort of thing and catch that same kind of magic with Green Lantern somehow. So we went out and we did Zero Hour. There were already some plans, you know, pretty much underway for what was going to happen to Hal, but it became very, very much a great opportunity to be able to make him part of Zero Hour.
What was it like to kind of revisit that in Booster Gold Number Zero with Jeff Johns?
It would have been fun to spend a little more time with that. I told Jeff.
I wanted more.
That's what I told him too. I said, you know, there's like three issues worth of stuff here, and you're getting rid of it in a page and a half. So
it
would have been a lot of fun. All
right. And I'm really loving the Time Masters revival, and I'm just dug the hell out of Number One. Like, at what point did this project come across your desk, or at what point was this thrown out there? And are you working in tandem with Grant at all?
The way it all came about is we were working on Booster at the time, and obviously we'd been using a great deal of Rip Hunter anyway. Mm. I think everyone is pretty much aware of the relationship that's there.
Yeah.
And so as things kind of came together, Dan DiDio gave me a call one day, and he basically just said, hey, do you think there's any kind of potential for a Rip Hunter series that would tie in with what's happening with Grant here? And as we talked about it and explored possibilities, it took us about 5 minutes to realize, yeah, we could do something. Certainly Grant was really good in setting the table in terms of saying, you know, here's Superman, Batman, you know, Batman is missing, here's Superman, Green Lantern, and Booster, and they can get in the Time Sphere and go search for Batman. So it became something of a natural.
Cool. Now, last question. Are we going to see who was laughing in Ted Kord's building in Booster Gold number 1 million?
It could be that you will see him. It could be you have already seen him.
Hmm.
Oh.
Like that.
Over to you, Colton.
Really, I mean, I will say this, that, okay. that I think the way it's all set up, the clues are there. It should be, you know, people should be able to kind of draw a logical conclusion.
It seems like it's either Black Beetle or it's Ted Kord himself, no?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to tell you. I've gone about as far as I should.
Prod. All right.
Ah, we almost had him.
Almost.
All right, so we're going to move on. Colton?
Hi. I've just really loved your Booster Gold run since you've started up this new volume. And, I mean, this has really gotten me to the character of me because my first time really seeing him was in the Justice League Unlimited episode where he gets to kind of, like, have his own little adventure, but he never gets any fame for it. And that's what really kind of first got me to the character. I thought, like, you know, that's kind of a cool idea for a hero, a glory hound who finally gets his one moment but never gets to see the glory from it.
Right.
And then to finally see this character in comics, I've really enjoyed it. He's got that kind of heart that you don't see in just, like, every little hero. Like, I mean, I love Batman, but he's not quite the kind of goofy character that I enjoy about Booster.
Okay.
And I was wondering, what do you most enjoy about writing a character like Booster compared to, say, Superman?
Well, I think, there's a couple of things. One of which is, when you do, part of what happens with a character like Superman, you know, let's go back to what I said about Doomsday, where I said, despite the long publication history, despite everything that has gone on, you know, Superman didn't have a villain, right? And, you know, at that point, there had been 50-plus years of publishing history with Superman. The point being that, you know, it's not by any means to say that every Superman story that can be told has been told, but an awful lot of them have. I think with Booster, there's a lot of stories there left to tell. There is a lot that's out there that would be different just because I don't think that there's really a character like Booster, certainly not in the DCU, and in many ways not, you know, in comics in general. That makes him pretty unique. And with that, I think if you just look at it from the plot structure, because it's kind of a time travel book, just because of that, you can tell just about any kind of story you want. But when you add the wrinkle that he really is kind of a unique character, character-wise, I think that opens that up quite a lot, too, and that's what makes it fun and interesting.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of potential. I mean, with time travel, you could tell just about any story, or in some cases, you can go back to old stories and kind of see a new angle on them.
Right, exactly.
Now, that brings me to our next question. How do you decide specific points or events to travel to in time in stories? I mean, is it a mood thing? Do you plan these things in advance? Or is there editorial decisions that you can and can't go to certain places?
I have never been given anything that I haven't been able to go revisit. I have never been told that I have to go to a specific area either. It's all been very much wide open. I think what we do is we try and look for things that make for an interesting... Sometimes it's just looking for an interesting locale and an interesting difference for Booster. Other times it's just looking for something where you get a different and potentially interesting sort of character interaction. And I think what you'll see, for example, in the Time Masters series, there's a couple of points. You know, if you saw the first issue, we start off with a flashback as to when Rip was a kid. And we'll see more things like that where we get to see Booster and or Rip kind of interact and interface with some interesting characters in the DCU. So you look for those touchstone points in terms of characters that are truly interesting. And that, again, you know, that's sort of in addition to the general plot of where you want to go and what you want to say. But I think that, you know, you can always key in on some of the biggest moments of the DCU, or you can even go to some of the quietest ones. There was a point in the book where I had Rip go make sure that Starfire from the Teen Titans was escaping, you know, the guys who had her jailed and everything, so she could actually succeed and go join the Titans. And just, you know, going back to key moments in the DCU like that, I think are part of what makes it fun as well. It really helps illustrate that there are a couple of Guardians out there protecting the time stream.
It's all about making sure that events happen the way they happen, even if it means that the events, you didn't like the events. Like when you had to make sure that Coast City happened and it wasn't stopped by the other time travelers.
Right, exactly.
One thing I've been wondering, are you off Booster for the foreseeable future, or is this only a temporary break now that with Giffen's Generation Lost going on?
Right now, I think that what you're going to see is, first I've got to get the Time Masters project taken care of. I think I'll be back at some point. We just haven't decided the exact timing of how it's all going to shake out.
So it just depends on how all this works out, basically?
Yeah, pretty much. Well, not just that in and of itself. I've got a couple other things I have to get to, one of which is I'll be drawing a couple of issues of DCU Legacies, issues 7 and 8, that kind of focus on the 90s events, many of which I did the first time around. So it's kind of like when everything else gets cleared off the board and we decide how we want to set things up and where we want to go. I just can't tell you the exact issue number at this point.
I'm loving Legacies now, by the way. It's a great series.
At Lin-Wan's good. On the matter of, you're both a writer and an artist. Which do you prefer doing?
You know, to me, it isn't so much which one I do as much as it is who I get to work with. And for example, first of all, when I write and draw a book, when I do both, I never see it as two separate jobs. To me, you know, doing the 22-page story when I'm writing and drawing it is all part of the cohesive whole. I mean, it's like doing the story. I don't see it as two separate jobs. When I'm just doing one of them, you know, when I'm working with a writer or if I'm writing and working with an artist, in the case of, for example, when I was doing Thor, if I was working with John Romita Jr. or Andy Kubert or Stuart Immonen or Tom Rainey, guys like that, I mean, they're fantastic artists. And part of what you do is you really enjoy the collaborative process. And if it's a question of just drawing stuff at that point, if I'm working like with somebody like Jeff Johns and Jeff Kaff, as I was on Booster for the first, you know, 10, 12 issues, there again, it's about the collaboration. So it's not a question of what do I prefer as much as, you know, whose work do I respect and who do I like to work with, and then what do we get at the end of the day when we complete an issue.
All right,
well, we're going to move on to Brandon, but before that, I want to ask, you're very familiar with most Green Lantern stories that have been going on since in the past and currently, right?
For the most part.
All right, what would you say is your favorite Green Lantern story right now?
You mean, like, of all time, or do you mean favorite Green Lantern story that's going right now, or...
Let's go with all time.
Let's say of all time.
Well, I think, you know, that's really tough because I don't think I have a favorite. I know there are certain issues and certain times that really spoke to me. If I think back to, you know, like when Gil Kane was drawing the book way back originally, and you think to that kind of classic cover where you have Green Lantern and Sinestro both charging their power rings at the same time. I mean, that is just a phenomenal, classic, enduring Green Lantern image.
Number 9.
You know, I still remember going to the store and picking up Denny O'Neil and Neil Adams' first issue of Green Lantern, and it was so stunningly different that it just, you know, it just rocked me. And then, you know, you had Green Arrow in the book wearing a costume that at that time it had appeared in Brave and Bold, but I never saw that, so that was my first exposure to Green Arrow's new costume at the time. I was like, whoa, what is this? And it was just so jarringly different that it was, you know, impossible not to appreciate. And I think even here recently where Jeff brought Hal back and kind of redid the origin story and you know, brought him back to Coast City and got things rolling again, that was such a a good rehabilitation of the character and relaunching of the character that it just, you know, set the table for everything else to come the next couple of years. So there's never just like one favorite story for me. Those are several within the character's history.
All right. Well put. Brandon?
All right. Just diving back into Time Masters. How much restriction did the bat offices throw on you? Did they say this is the end point and you can't go out in this direction and this is off limits, but feel free to do whatever else? Was it really tough to make a great story out of that?
I think that it's funny, no one ever gave me a restriction. I think that it's safe to say that I just always had the understanding that, you know, we weren't going to do a story that starts off with finding Bruce Wayne in issue one and taking him back to modern-day Gotham City. I mean, you know, no one ever told me, no, you can't do that. I think that is something I assumed, and I'm pretty sure I was probably right on that score. But there hasn't been, let's put it this way, I mean, I haven't gone through and said, hey, anything, where I've said, hey, I want to do this, and had anyone say no to me.
That's a very good thing to tell people. That's rare, actually, from what I hear. So,
well,
congrats,
you know,
on that.
I mean, look, I think my track record. I think my track record is pretty good. And, you know, I don't think that people are going to perceive me as coming in to play with the toys and break some of them while I'm doing it. It's what we are doing is. And just to be clear on this, in terms of what Time Masters is as a project, it is a project that focuses on Rip Hunter. What you're seeing on it is, if in The Return of Bruce Wayne, what you're seeing is the story from Bruce Wayne's point of view, what we're doing is the search for Batman from Rip Hunter's point of view. It can kind of be about the same events in a way, or the same problem, but you're telling it through two completely different pairs of eyes with two completely different experiences as they go through the story.
All right. Glad we cleared that up.
All right.
Well, a lot of comic fans say that the JLA book absolutely, positively needs the Big Seven in there. They need to be there front and center. As someone who's written those characters, both in JLA and out, do you think that's the case? Does the Justice League of America book needs those big guns in order to succeed, or are the sidekicks and the lesser known characters just fine with you?
I don't know that you need to have all seven at once. I think what you need to have is like a core of, say, three or four of them who are always in the book at the same time. You know, that is something that I think Marvel always did very, very successfully with the Avengers, that at any given time between, like, you know, Cap, Thor, and Iron Man, you know, I always thought of them as being sort of the core member of the Avengers, and then a lot of different people kind of moving in and out among their circle, and if one of them was off on an adventure, you know, somewhere else for some reason that they couldn't be there, the book still worked out okay. I don't know that Justice League has to be the core seven, but I think what it has to have is the sensibility of having the core few members and the strongest members of the DCU in the book. And, you know, when I was doing it, we had JLA, we had Justice League Europe, and everything else, and I thought at that point, if you're going to take all the various versions of the Justice League that sort of existed at that time, be it JLI, JLE, JLA, Justice League conglomerate, whatever, it's like you had 28 characters in the Justice League family then, and they were spread out all over the place. And that, to me, is too much, too. You know, that's too far the other direction. I think you need to have, like, you know, 6 to 8 characters with some confluence of Superman, Batman, Green Lantern, Wonder Woman, and Flash always involved, not necessarily all of them at the same time.
Agreed, definitely.
That's a long, long answer to a short question.
It's a perfect answer to a short question, so thank you. Do you ever I don't know, wake up one day, look around your office and say, I am the Superman writer of this generation. Like, 10 years, 20 years from now, people will be reading my stories and you just sit down and smile, take the day off because of what you've done in the past.
No, nothing like that. What I do know is that we, you know, everything we did when I was doing Superman really was a group effort. We were like a band. And we had, either 2 books a month or 3 books a month and ultimately 4 books a month that would work together. And I think I look at it and say, we certainly did some stuff that is going to resonate as part of Superman history for a long, long time. And, you know, and I think that's great. At the same time, I know, you know, like Doomsday is still out there and will always be, I think, a worthwhile character in the DCU. I think Cyborg Superman, who has become much more a Green Lantern villain, same thing is true there, just like, you know, Booster is still around as well. So, you know, I look back on it and I think we hit some remarkable high points in terms of the Superman work. We also turned in our share of bummers, but, you know, like I said, I think that I can see some stuff that was there that will always resonate as part of Superman lore and canon.
Cool. Just one last tidbit. Back to Booster. Is there any Booster story that stands out as your favorite?
That's an interesting question. I don't know that there is a particular story as much as there are, you know, particular moments in that I go for. And that is, you know, when I do, one of the things about doing Booster that's a lot of fun, I think, is some of the character bits. A lot of it, there was a time when a lot of it was the byplay with Ted Kord. You know, in intervening times, I think, for example, the scene that Jeff came up with where Batman essentially is the only DC character to figure out what Booster is really up to and kind of say, well, you know, if you ever need to talk to someone, I'm here for you kind of thing. I thought that was just a great moment.
Yeah.
Because Booster really is very, very isolated. So I think all that stuff definitely is part of it. And as moments and instances are what I look for more in characterization.
Agreed. Well, turning it back to our host, Frank, take it away.
All right. So, just to touch on that, you brought up Cyborg Superman and seeing that he has now become a Green Lantern villain. And you know, I guess as you know, he's his quest for death itself. How do you feel about this? The character that you created now becoming a mainstream Green Lantern villain.
I think that's great. I think he should still be a Superman villain as well. But when I say that, I mean that I think, you know, he can be a Superman villain and a Green Lantern villain. There was a, you know, it's just like within the Marvel Universe, Kingpin functioned as both a Spider-Man villain and a Daredevil villain. That I think that it's great that the Cyborg Superman has enough elasticity that he can stretch, you know, kind of across both worlds, so to speak. But at the same time, you know, I think it would be nice to see him kind of bounce back and forth between the two.
Very well put, including with the Sinestro Corps War, having him be such a main part during that gigantic story arc that Jeff Johns did.
Jeff did a great job with him, and I think it all worked out from a characterization standpoint very, very well and fit the character. And I think it's great that he's kind of, you know, helped keep him at that status.
Mm-hmm. That's great. A few follow-ups. The only thing I would add is, do you ever see if Tangent's going to come back?
You know, we've talked about it on a couple of occasions. Right now, I think that what we're more interested in doing is kind of shoring up the DCU before we start and try and, you know, put together something on another one.
Hmm. how often are you reading anything right now? Like, seriously, like with your workload, are you do you ever take a good chunk of time to sit down and read anything?
You mean in terms of stuff put out by like Marvel and DC, things like that?
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, by all means. I mean, well, with DC, I have to. I mean, you've got to kind of know where the characters are and everything. But yeah, by all means.
We'll make sure Dan DiDio knows you're reading it all the time.
Well, no, you want to, I mean, seriously, you've got to know kind of what's going on in your backyard.
Exactly, as well put.
What are you enjoying right now?
I think that I enjoy things for different reasons. And that, you know, sometimes you just like reading stuff that your friends do and things like that. With DC, I read it more for the... That's a good way to explain it. At DC, it's more for like encyclopedia-type nature, just keep up with everything, make sure of what's current and what's happening in the DCU in general. So it doesn't quite function in the same way as the question you asked.
Huh.
Alrighty then.
I mean, it's work.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I can understand that. Sure. Last thing, what's next for you after Legacies?
First it's a question of finishing Time Masters, then we move into Legacies, and then we've got a couple of things set to go, and it's just a little too early to actually get into that at this point.
All right, but you do have a future project.
Oh, yeah. I have, five future projects. So, yeah, it's just none of it has been announced.
Right. So can you give us a little tease for your...
Yeah, how about a tease?
Unfortunately, a tease? I can't do that.
All right, so how about a tease for Legacies? What is Len cooked up for you in the 90s era issues?
Yeah, well, you know, let's put it this way, that I think kind of the joke that's been going around, for example, is like when Andy Kubert did the first couple of issues, you know, they had to send him tons and tons of reference and all that sort of stuff just so, you know, he could deal with the Golden Age stuff, right? The JSA
right.
stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And when Jose Luis Garcia Lopez did his couple of issues, same kind of thing. You know, here's the reference on the, you know, the Sea Devils and Cave Carson and all that stuff. The thing that I've been told about these things and certainly, you know, we've gotten the covers done and the covers bear this out. It's like, it's all the stuff I did. So, I won't say that I'll remember how to do everything, but it should be second nature to a certain degree.
Very nice.
They picked the right time for you.
Look forward to it.
I even said, gee, maybe you should have had me do something different. But, you know, I mean, it's, you know, you really are going to be looking at stuff that deals with, for example, the death of Superman, the Azrael stuff in terms of Batman's world, Bane, Doomsday, all that. You'll see the effects of Zero Hour and some of the other things. The reign of the Superman, all that stuff is kind of going there because those were the key moments of the 90s, along with, you know, like Kyle and Hal and everything that happened between them.
Wow, that's great. That's great stuff to look forward to.
Yeah,
it should be fun. It should be fun.
Well, all right. Well, that's about it for our questions. I'm glad you stuck through it with us, even though, you know, with the having to keep you waiting for a while.
Not a problem. I'm glad it all worked out.
Same with us. Again, it's an honor to have you on the show. If you ever want to come back, we'll keep in touch.
Great pleasure.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, have a good night, all right?
Okay. You too, guys. Good night.
Nice talking, Dan.
Goodbye.
Pleasure.
Man, did you just put us on mute and like is listening in on us?
Hi, Dan. It was
Dan,
a great interview.
Dan, you totally want to talk to us more?
It's fine. So from now on, it's off the record. Oh, damn.
All right, that was good. That was good. I'm glad that. That turned
it fell
out.
Short.
That was a blast.
Really short.
You know why it fell short? Yeah. You know why it fell short? Yeah, it was because Eric wasn't here. Eric and Kuhan.
Would have been forever.
Kuhan would have said some inane questions going like, yeah, so, you know...